Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast. I'm Ian Welsh, and joining me today, I'm delighted to be joined by Yuka Varts, Senior Researcher, Sustainable Value Chain Development at Wageningen University in the Netherlands. Welcome to the podcast, Yuka.
Thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit about the work of the university, and then some of the work you're doing, particularly around living incomes and deforestation and forest protection. Why don't you start by giving us a bit of background to what Wageningen University does in this space?
Well, Wageningen University and Research is the life science university in the Netherlands, and we cover all aspects of agriculture and food-related topics, including consumer science. So everything that has to do with food or raw material production everywhere in the world towards the consumer level, where we also research and provide solutions for consumer health and nutrition aspects of the food value chain.
And you work with business quite a lot as well, don't you?
Yes, we do. So in my department, we work a lot with companies and organizations and platforms around coffee and tea and cocoa production, specifically to see what kind of interventions would work best to lift smallholder farmers and workers on plantations out of poverty.
I know you do a lot of work on living incomes. How do you define living income then? And why for you are they so vital in thinking around poverty alleviation?
Well, we've done a lot of assessments in the cocoa and the tea sector, because what you see there, there's a lot of poverty in smallholder farming systems, but also at plantations where workers do not earn enough to have a decent living or a decent life. We've done a lot of assessments to see what the poverty levels are and what the possibilities are for people to actually move out of poverty towards earning a living income or a living wage. And the living income and living wage benchmarks were developed because people realized that the World Bank poverty benchmark is actually means bare survival. It is a nice benchmark to know that people are actually surviving, but it's better to be able to offer people living around the world a decent perspective to life, which is why the living income and the living wage methodologies were developed.
Can you just give us a quick rundown, a run through of the differences between a living income and living wage? I know it's complementary, but what is the difference between living income and living wage?
The concepts are fairly the same. The thing is, with a living wage, which is the concept which was developed quite some time ago and where also quite some academic literature is existing, it is all about a person working on a plantation or a farm or in a factory and having sufficient enough wage levels, so being paid sufficiently to have a decent life. If you look at living income, it's about what the farmer and his and her family actually earn from agricultural production, but also other activities, and to see whether that adds up to having a sufficient income. So the concepts are the same. It's all about decency, having a decent life. But the way you calculate a living income and living wage level is a bit different.
What are the interventions then that you've seen that can successfully lift smaller communities out of poverty?
Well, here it gets interesting. We've been part of a lot of interventions in the tea and cocoa sectors in the past 15 years. The thing there is that we see that some of the interventions have some influence on incomes, but that there are so many other factors influencing incomes levels because, for instance, market prices or production levels or governmental regulations, that in the past it has been very difficult to actually lift a large portion of farmers out of poverty and specifically having them earn a living income. So even though there have been a lot of investments in agricultural sectors such as tea and cocoa, still most of the farmers remain poor. And that's actually quite worrying, I would say. We've recently published a paper on this. We hope we can, well, support the development of solutions to actually make this happen more often.
I saw in your paper that you make the point that right now there's no business case for lifting the poorest farmers out of poverty. So perhaps you can explain a little bit around that. Why is there no business case and what do we need to do about it?
So what we've seen is that there's quite a big group of farmers who have such a situation that they will never be able to get out of poverty or earn more than the living income line. And that's because of specifically their farm sizes. If you have 0.1 hectare of tea or if you have 1 hectare of cocoa, it's very difficult to earn more than a living income together with your family. Also because there are very few employment opportunities for people to work in. So there's actually quite a large group of farmers who owns a very small parcel of land where farm prices are affecting income levels directly, which is always the case, but where also productivity levels are low. So if you look at the combination and you see that productivity levels, it's very difficult to have them raised or have farmers investing in their farms and raising productivity levels. The farm sizes are so small, and it's also an extreme challenge to increase the market price because that's not how the market works. And all in all, the combination leads to a large group of farmers who will not be able to earn more than a living income. We give an argumentation that for private sector and for businesses, it's extremely difficult to work with these farmers and to lift them out of poverty. Also, it doesn't really make a lot of sense because they need different types of support than other farmers who are ready to invest and who are willing to innovate. So actually what we say is there's no business case. You won't be able to invest in such farmers and have a return. So there is a real need for the government to be involved in supporting those farmers. And actually, if you look at what kind of support is really needed, is you need to take a bigger picture look at what's happening in a certain sector, in a certain region, and look at the structural factors underlying the poverty levels, such as farm sizes, and address that in your solutions.
So, I mean, it's quite a bleak picture you paint then. You see this, there's no way out for many smallholder farmers to get out of poverty unless there essentially is in government intervention, I imagine, grant income for the farmers. Is that the only solution, or is there a business-led solution that can work?
Well, there is, but not necessarily for the farmers that need it the most. And that's the difficult issue here. So what we see in reality is that generally the better farmers who have the most potential to develop further and to improve their yields are also the ones being targeted by programs, which makes perfect business sense. But looking at the farmers who are the poorest and who need it the most, you need a different type of intervention. The discussion, for instance, on farm sizes, people are very attached to their land. So it's very difficult to say, well, we need land reform and people need to let go of their land, culturally speaking. It's also an insurance for old age. So they have some income or some food in the old age. But we have to discuss these structural issues because farm sizes are only getting smaller because of inheritance structures. And if we're not discussing it, well, the situation will become worse and farm sizes will become smaller. It is a bleak picture. We have seen income improvements in some of the projects over time, but still the big impact that people are, well, looking forward to and expecting, we haven't seen it happening in the past 10 years. It's not because people are doing things wrong. Sometimes it's simply not possible to lift farmers out of poverty. So we make an argument for really transparent and honest interventions where you're transparent about the people you're helping and what kind of people you cannot help or someone else should be helping, for instance, the government.
Is there then a need to be thinking more in terms of establishing sustainable farmer communities so that there's a, if you like, an opportunity for those who do have farms that are so small that really there's something that can be done really to live them out of poverty simply from the income from their farm, but you need to develop a community where there are other opportunities for those farmers?
Yeah, so one of the things that could be looked at is, well, land use planning. So how can you make it easier for farmers to lease land to other farmers and try to find another income earning opportunity? Obviously, this is very difficult, right? It's something that's not happening organically, apparently, because otherwise it would have happened. But we've seen areas where in one area, there was not enough labor available to work, for instance, in construction or infrastructure, while in the other area, there were too many people being unemployed and not having enough work to earn a living. So there are opportunities, it depends where, but you really have to look at the bigger picture of, I would say, a landscape or a region or in a certain area, in a certain sector, what the issues are, who can you help and who can't you help within your sphere of influence. And I think it's important that the companies themselves who are working with these farmers and sourcing produce from these farmers try to engage the government into looking at these other solutions, such as employment and, I would say, land use planning or land reform.
What you're saying is that simply a holistic approach is required. You have to deal with everything at once. You have to get all the problems and all the issues and bring them together across a landscape. And that then is how you can start moving forward.
Yeah, but obviously, I think quite a number of initiatives are already trying to do that. But there you see that it's extremely difficult. And what we say is be really transparent about who are actually living in the landscape and what the possibilities are and target your support. So don't work with all the farmers in the area in the same way, but really target your support to optimize people and farmers changing their behavior. Different stakeholders have different priorities in how they spend their money and what they do in the area they work in. In terms of the private sector, they have a lot of leverage with the local government, for instance, because they are an important partner. So in terms of my advice would be to really try and use honest data and honest information about what's happening, what they see happening in terms of trends, in terms of climate change impacts, in terms of land use fragmentation, and discuss what the possibilities are for future developments. And you never know what the priorities are of the local government and whether they would like to pick it up. But I do see this as a role that the private sector could play.
Looking forward then, what are the specific roles of the private sector that you want to see them play?
Just what I just said. Taking up the discussions with the government and with other companies in the same sector. It's already happening, but what you see now is that there's still a lot of discussions on privacy of data. So we as Wageningen University, we have the luxury, I would say, to work on data from multiple parties, but often we cannot bring them together. So I would say that's an important aspect of becoming transparent about what's happening. And then on the other side is integrating in the programs working with farmers a behavioral change perspective. Because what we've seen in the past 15 years is that farmers have been in a lot of programs have been implemented, but farmers haven't still adopted a lot of the new practices and technologies, which is mainly because behavioral aspects and behavioral drivers haven't been taken into account enough. So the programs have often been around training, farm field schools, etc. But there are so many factors influencing farmers' behavior, the same as for consumers. We know it when we go to the supermarket and we want to buy something healthy. The same is for the farmers. They make their decisions daily based on various aspects, such as their community, the household, government regulations, market price, all kinds of services that are available, which should be taken into account in all the interventions. And so far, we think that's something that could be developed further.
And I guess all these interventions, all these aspects you just mentioned, the private sector can have significant roles in influencing. And perhaps that's what they can do best to really move entire farming communities towards a more sustainable future.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. It's been lovely to talk with you again, Jukka. Jukka Vaerts, Senior Researcher, Sustainable Value Chains at Wageningen University in the Netherlands. But for today, Jukka, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.